you have your Bibles, turn to Nehemiah, the fifth chapter.
Nehemiah 5, 14 through 19. Nehemiah 5, 14 through 19. I've always considered myself to be a rather practical individual. I mean, I like to see how things work, and oftentimes I like to think about how that we could do it better or do it quicker. In fact, down deep inside, I get frustrated about a lot of things, but I'm a frustrated efficiency expert. I like to make sure that things run the way they should. But if you were to talk to Susan, she would not call me frustrated. She would call me frustrating. And she wouldn't say that that word expert unless she added the last part, you know, to be that little quip, past drip. But whatever else that you look at, as you look at the book of Nehemiah, you find that the book of Nehemiah is a very practical book. Because as we go through the pages and we look at the life and the experience of Nehemiah, we find again and again that Nehemiah deals with problems and decisions that are very relevant to us today. Well, as we began our study, we realized that during the past few weeks that God suddenly called Nehemiah away from a very important job in the palace of King Artaxerxes to go to Jerusalem and rebuild the wall. And since then, Nehemiah has faced great adversity. He's faced criticism, plots by his enemies, complaints by the workers. He's faced famine and inflation and greedy merchants, and we could go on and on and on again of the adversity. But we see step by step and problem by problem, Nehemiah has gone to God for guidance and help. And now the work on the wall is nearly done. Folks, adversity is a painful teacher. The dictionary calls or says that adversity is marked by unhappiness, hardship, and distress. Thomas Carlyle once said, "Adversity is hard on a man, but for one man who can stand prosperity, there are 100 that will stand adversity." And Charles Swindoll said something very similar when he wrote, "Few people can live in the lap of luxury and maintain their spiritual, emotional, and moral equilibrium. Sudden elevation often disturbs balance, which leads to pride and a sense of self-sufficiency, and then a fall." It's ironic, but more of us can hang tough through a demotion than through a promotion. And it's at this level a godly leader shows himself or herself strong, and then he says the right kind of leaders, when promoted, know how to handle the honor. And Nehemiah experienced all of these things, and folks, in a lot of ways, so have many of us. I mean, maybe it's been the heartache of an unhappy job, or maybe it's the discouragement of losing a job. Or it may have been the feeling that no one needs or wants you anymore. Or it may be the embarrassment or having to stand in an unemployment line or ask for help just to make ends meet. Remember years ago down at Cape Canaveral, one of the big things that was going on was the space program. I mean, there were PhDs there who were involved in all of that, and they were really, they felt secure in their jobs. I mean, there were planets to explore. There were missiles or shuttle systems to design and rockets to build. And it seems like it would never end. But almost overnight, for some reason, their dream just came crashing down. The space program was shelved. We find that other contracts were withdrawn and jobs were terminated. And men and women who were highly educated suddenly found themselves either being demoted or fired, but all of them found themselves very, very disillusioned. But that was not the case with Nehemiah here. As you come to that 14th verse of chapter 5, you find that Nehemiah has been promoted. King Artaxerxes has appointed Nehemiah governor of Judah. And remember when we started way back when we first started these lessons? And we said there were three divisions. We find Nehemiah the cupbearer, Nehemiah the builder, and then we come today to Nehemiah the governor. And so Nehemiah now is the highest official in all the land. And so I guess we can just assume that Nehemiah's adversities are all behind him. That now he's the governor, all his problems are gone. But don't believe it. I mean, if Nehemiah thought that he had problems as a wall builder, he needed to understand that he was going to face great adversities in being the governor. In fact, very soon he finds himself dealing with two major problems. The first problem Nehemiah faced was corruption, the corrupt practices of the former governors. We read about it in verse 15 where it says, "But the early governors, those preceding me, placed a heavy burden on the people." In other words, they were raising the taxes too high. The people were overtaxed. And then it goes on to say, "And took 40 shekels of silver from them in addition to the food and the wine." That's payola or bribery. Someone would come along and they'd say, "Well, you want your street paved? You want that pothole fixed? You want that project that you had in mind? You know, a little bit of food and wine and a few shekels of silver will enable us to move your project right up the line to get it up more in the top priority list." And verse 15 goes on to say, "Their assistants also lorded it over the people." And so the people were overtaxed, they were oppressed, they were intimidated by a corrupt government that was caught up in abusing its power. And so when Nehemiah walks into his office on the very first day, you can just imagine that that office is just filled with people wanting to see him. You know, "Governor Nehemiah, you know, we are so happy that you have been promoted to this exalted position." I mean, there's a lot of responsibilities that take place in this office and you know, in part of this government, and you're going to need some help. But you're lucky. We know how to handle all these things. So, you know, we'll be able to help you. So just leave it to us. You just enjoy being the governor, and we'll handle all the details. And somebody might have come up to him and whispered in his ears, "You know, don't worry. I mean, this is just how things work around here. And if you've got some friends that need a job, nobody's going to squawk about that. So enjoy your position. You've got the perfect setup here." Now, how does he respond to that? Verse 15 goes on to say, "But out of reverence for God, I did not act like that." Nehemiah says that may have been the way that they did it in the past. That may have been the previous administration, but I will not act like that. I will not act like that. Now the law of God will guide us. And the new policy is going to be a policy of righteousness. Proverbs 29:2 says, "When the righteous thrive, the people rejoice. When the wicked rule, the people groan." And that word thrive could also be translated promoted. And so when the righteous are promoted, when they rise in prominence and power, it's then that the people rejoice. But when the wicked rule, the people groan. And don't take me wrong this morning. No matter what political party or administration, we need someone in the White House with the character of Nehemiah. We need righteous, honorable people in our Congress and in our state houses and in our local government. We also need righteous, honorable newsmen and entertainers and editors. We need to restore honor and righteousness in our nation. Why? Because when the righteous thrive, the people rejoice. When the wicked rule, the people groan. And we who are voters, folks, we need to exercise our power, the power that has been entrusted to us, to let these people know that we expect only the very best from them. The second problem Nehemiah faced was deciding how to handle the power and privileges that went with this promotion. I mean, and one of those privileges was just an unlimited expense account and generous food allowance. Listen to verses 17 through 18. He says, "Furthermore, 150 Jews and officials ate at my table, as well as those who came to us from the surrounding nations. Each day, one ox, six choice sheep, and some poultry were prepared for me, and every 10 days an abundant supply of wine of all kinds." And you can just imagine, there's an overwhelming temptation for him just to give in to the luxuries of his surrounding. I mean, it's all there before him, a luxurious housing, fine wines. I mean, all that the world could ever offer. But Nehemiah doesn't give in. I mean, Nehemiah had been sent by God to rebuild the wall, and the wealth that surrounded him never enticed him, never got the best of him. And then listen to the rest of verse 18. He says, "In spite of all this, I never demanded the food allotted to the governor because the demands were heavy on these people." He said, "I never abused my power. I never took advantage of the taxpayers' money." But we understand with power, you know, comes all kinds of temptations, doesn't it? That old statement, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And now Nehemiah is the highest official in the land. I mean, he can do whatever he wants to do. And when you feel yourself to be superior to others, then it's easy to begin abusing your power. And again, I ask you, isn't that basically what's happened in Washington? I mean, isn't it possible that some get so obsessed with the privileges and the powers of their positions that they feel free just to ignore the rules and the guidelines? But again, Nehemiah didn't. I mean, despite this new authority and power, Nehemiah remained faithful. He had a job to do. And in verse 16, he says, "I devoted myself to the work on this wall. All my men were assembled there for the work. We did not acquire any land. Neither Nehemiah or anyone in his administration took advantage of insider information." I mean, they were faithful to the task that they were chosen to do. Wouldn't it be great if we had men like and women like that today in our government? Well, the last thing we need to note here is that with promotion comes responsibility. Responsibility to people. And Nehemiah never lost his sensitivity to the people. I mean, certainly he had privileges and power. I mean, certainly he had a project that needed to be finished. But most important thing, as far as he was concerned, was the people. He never got so caught up with what he was doing that he lost the heartbeat of the nation. I mean, he heard their hurts, their cries, their tears. He never lost touch with the people. And that brings me to a couple of little sections of Scripture that I think that our nation and its leaders in particular need to consider today. In the last part of verse 15, Nehemiah says, "Out of reverence for God, I did not act like that." He's saying the reason I didn't abuse my privileges, the reason my policies were policies of integrity, The reason I kept my eye on the project of rebuilding the wall and the reason I never lost sensitivity to the people was my reverence for God. That's where our nation has fallen apart, isn't it? It's lost sight of God. And I was amazed this week, again, as you know, I told you last week, I read various things, news channels or web pages, I should say. And I'm finding more and more people starting to say, you know, we've lost our moral compass. We need to, you know, we need to get back to putting God back in things. Even, I don't know whether you read it, even Oprah Winfrey said that this week. That we need to get back to God and understand it's only when we reverence, have reverence for God, and out of that reverence serve that we find that our nation will be changed. You know, I pray every day for our nation, don't you? Every day. And of course, part of that prayer is always, God, direct us back to you. Open our eyes and help us to see that you are what we need to really make a transformation back to where we need to be. It's the only thing that's going to make things better. And that made all the difference. He says, out of reverence for God. And that made all the difference to Nehemiah. God was his Lord, and because of that, he was a different kind of leader. Of course, we know that our vice president is chastised all the time because, you know, he's a Christian. Because God is his Lord, and he's taken a stance on certain things. He says because of his leadership with God, he would not abuse the people or the rights that were theirs. Because God was his Lord, he was determined to act righteously and not abuse his power and his position and his privileges. I mean, again, how we need leaders with that same spirit today, don't you think? Then in verse 19 he says, remember me with favor, O my God, for all I have done for these people. I mean, does that sound self-serving? Does it sound like he's trying to bargain with God? I mean, some look at it that way, but that's when they do, they read it wrongly. You see, what Nehemiah is doing is recognizing God's gracious promise that he will care for the needs of those who walk with him. He will help them. And understand, not always economically or materially, but it may be just spiritual blessings which are far greater than the material gain. And in the midst of extreme poverty, this has often been the case. But God will always bless. Hebrews 6:10, the writer says, God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you have shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them. And you can count on that. You see, what Nehemiah is really praying is, Lord, I have sought to do your will. Now respond with your gracious nature. I mean, he doesn't ask for anything. I mean, he doesn't demand anything. He's not bargaining with God. He's just merely calling upon God to honor his promises. And when you serve God as you ought, when you use whatever position that you have as you ought, then God remembers you and never forgets the service that you have rendered for his glory. It's interesting that the 13 original colonies had within their constitution this, that all those elected to public office must affirm their faith in God and their belief in a day of judgment before that God. Why? Because they were convinced that wasn't enough. It wasn't enough for these officials to be accountable to the voters that put them in office. He must also believe that someday he will have to give an answer to God for what he had done. Can you imagine if our officials and our government people had that in mind? I mean, they may not know it, they may not think about it, but every one of them, just like every one of us, are going to have to stand before God, and we're going to have to give an account for what we have done, what we have done for Him, and what we have done for others. And so Nehemiah says, "Remember me with favor, O God, O my God, for all I have done for these people." Dr. Paul Brandt, a well-known doctor and author, was raised by missionaries, by his parents, who were missionaries to India. And in his book, In His Image, he writes about his mother. And he says there that she was, you know, and I want you to understand, it's a great touching story if you really listen to it. But he says that his mother was, at 75 years old, would walk miles across the southern parts of India just teaching people about Jesus Christ. And he said one day at 75, she was walking along and she fell and she broke her hip and she laid there in pain for 2 days until finally someone found her. And these workers took and built a makeshift cot, and they lifted her and put her on the back of a Jeep and drove 150 miles across deeply rutted roads to get her to someone, to a doctor that could set her injury, fix her hip. But that bumpy ride caused it so her hip would never completely heal. And he wrote this. He said, "I visited my mother in her mud-covered hut several weeks after all this happened. I watched as she took two bamboo crutches that she had made herself and moved from one place to another with her feet just dragging behind her because she had lost all feeling in them." He said, "At age 75, with a broken hip, unable to stand on her own two legs, I thought I had made a pretty intelligent suggestion. I suggested that she retire. And she turned around and she looked at me and said, 'Of what value is that? If we try to preserve this body just a few more years and it's not being used for God, what value is that?' And so she kept on working. She kept on riding her donkey to villages until she was 93 years old, and at 93, she couldn't stay on the donkey anymore. She kept falling off. But she didn't stop teaching. Indian men would carry her in hammocks from one village to another, and she continued to tell people about Jesus until she died at age 95. And then he writes, "My most vivid memory of my mother is of her propped up against a stone wall as people are coming to her from their homes, schools, and places of work. I can still see the wrinkles in her face and her skin so tanned by the weather and the heat. I saw her speaking to those people. I looked at them and saw the sparkle in their eyes and the smile on their faces. And I saw them deeply moved by the message of God's love spoken by this old woman. And I knew what they saw was not an old woman who had passed her prime, but a beautiful person bringing tidings of love straight from heaven. Remember me with favor, O my God, for all I have done for these people." You see, Nehemiah didn't just claim to be a follower of God. I mean, he proved it, didn't he? He proved it by his actions. And you and I need to remember that the way we show our love for God is by keeping His commandments and loving other people. That's what the church is all about, isn't it? And we're the church. We're the people of God. And we need to be faithful like Nehemiah. We can talk about our government. They surely need to be faithful. But folks, it starts at the ground roots, doesn't it? It starts right here. And we need to be faithful to Him in what we do here in Stark. And then allow that to work outward. But I dare say that most of us would have to admit, oftentimes we're not very faithful. Oftentimes we put our wants. I mean, I don't find anywhere as I read through the book of Nehemiah where Nehemiah put his wants, his desires, what he thought were his needs above everybody else. He had a project, he had a goal in mind, and that was to serve God. To serve God. And this lady, Brant's mother, isn't that what she had? She had this drive to serve God. You know, what is good is it if I just, at this age, just because I've had a broken hip, just because I have to use crutches to move around, what good is it if I just stop? And the same thing was with us. We're not too old. We're not too infirmed. But we have a responsibility. And we have a responsibility to God. And folks, we will be held accountable for that responsibility. Let's be obedient to Him. And maybe that should be part of our decision this morning. Maybe it should be part of your decision this morning as you stand, as we get ready to stand and sing our decision hymn, because that's what it is. It's a decision by you that you're going to do what God wants you to do. You're going to serve Him better. You're going to love people. And folks, if you love people, what's the natural outcome? To bring them to Christ. That's what it's all about. So if you've got a decision to make this morning, I've got a decision to make this morning as we stand and sing.